Board of Education.
One, the Florida Director of Virginia Department of Corrections, nominate Cox Hall Petitioner's Counsel, Donald Lee, Jeffrey the Third, Senior Assistant Attorney General, Adam Quinlan, Adelphio Assistant Attorney General, Stuart A. Raphael, Solicitor General, Trevor S. Cox, Deputy Solicitor General, Respondent Counsel.
If it pleases the court.
I'm John A. Cogshill, appellate attorney for Travion Blunt. I'd like to take 10 minutes of your time, 5 minutes to respond.
All right.
This is a bit unusual, justices. Travion Blunt is a 25-year-old prisoner in River North Penitentiary, and he's here today asking this court to uphold the law, exactly as it was interpreted by this very same court in 1872. He maintains that this court's ruling in Lee v. Murphy is good law, that it's never been overturned and is still good law today. The Commonwealth is going to come up next and insist that this court's law really isn't the law anymore, or it was decided wrong. And even if it is the law, it really needs to be changed. That's quite a role reversal for offender and Commonwealth. So, been quite a legal roller coaster for Mr. Blunt and my secretary and my researcher and me, because that's all the appellant is in this, us four. We don't have the manpower and time like the Commonwealth to put together an inch-thick book like this compilation of alleged commutations of non-capital crimes that supposedly went on for 143 years after Lee v. Murphy, supposedly ignoring Lee v. Murphy with impunity. And the Commonwealth is now saying because for so long the executive branch ignored Lee v. Murphy that we should just continue to do so. But a federal case, 1970s Waltz v. New York State Tax Commission, is clear on that subject. Quote, no one acquires a vested or protected right in violation of the Constitution by long use, even when the span of time covers our entire national existence and even predates it.
Counsel, may I ask you this?
Sure.
Why do we assume that the 1,000-plus pardons that, or rather commutations, that were issued by these various governors over the course of these years were not proper under Lee versus Murphy? There appears to be no evidence that any one of those prisoners asserted that they did not agree or accept the conditional pardons.
Well, Your Honor, Lee v. Murphy, he accepted it, but then he said the governor didn't have the power to do it.
Right, but under your theory of Lee versus Murphy applying here, those 1,640 pardons are not unlawful or in violation of Lee versus Murphy unless they were rejected by the prisoner. Because if the prisoner accepted them, and you can assume that they all did, then Lee versus Murphy is actually satisfied. So we don't have to condemn 1,640 commutations / conditional pardons to rule here.
I agree with that 100%, Your Honor. That's true. Perhaps all these 1,640 signatures are in complete compliance with Lee versus Murphy. However, if they aren't, I would like to point out to the court that it didn't happen for 143 years anyway.
Can I interrupt you, though? But Lee versus Murphy never said they had to sign the warrant. Just said it had to be accepted. The condition had to be accepted.
Which it was.
Well, the question is the 1,640 conditional pardon / commutations. There's nothing that in Lee versus Murphy that would say that acceptance had to be in the form of signing the warrant.
No, sir. I can't, thinking back on Lee versus Murphy, although Murphy did he was offered an acceptance signature and did sign it.
Why do you think that was, counsel?
Why
do you think he was offered and signed it?
Lee versus Murphy construed this as kind of a contract. An offer and acceptance.
No, I'm not asking about this court's analysis in Lee versus Murphy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm asking what do you posit as the reason why he may have had to sign the governor's action?
Well, it was offered to him by the governor, and I could assume that Murphy signed it.
Was there something in the governor's action that he had the ability to reject?
I think if he didn't sign it, Your Honor, it would have been construed as an objection.
Okay. In that case, he was in the custody of the Commonwealth in the state penitentiary, was he not?
He was under Lee's purview.
Mm-hmm. And he was in the state penitentiary?
he was in jail. And my recollection of the case, Your Honor, is that Lee said you've got to go to the penitentiary because your commutation is void. The statute.
Prior to the commutation, was he in the penitentiary?
He was supposed to go to the penitentiary,
okay.
Yes.
Okay. And instead, he was given the option of going to the city of Richmond jail.
That was what the Governor Walker did, yes.
And if he turned down the option of going to the city of Richmond jail, he would have gone to the penitentiary.
Correct.
There was a condition.
Yes.
In other words, I am offering you less time if you agree as a condition of less time to serve it in the city of Richmond jail.
Yes.
So that's a conditional pardon.
Yes.
Okay. What's the condition in your case?
In the Blunt case?
Yes.
The condition, there is none, Your Honor. It's a commutation for a non-capital crime.
What if it's not a commutation and it's not a conditional pardon? What if it's neither?
It's mislabeled? Okay, let's pursue that then.
Yeah.
Secretary of the Commonwealth's website offers inmates three options: simple pardons, conditional pardons, and absolute pardons. Never mentions commutations. Mm-hmm. Offenders aren't offered that. The Commonwealth has said, well, if this is not a commutation, it's a partial pardon.
Okay.
That word doesn't exist on the Commonwealth's own website.
Don't care about the website. Don't care about what the title on the order is. We're looking at what the document actually does. What is a full pardon? It's when everything's wiped away.
Yes,
is that
sir.
Correct?
Correct.
A conditional pardon is when the defendant must accept something that is offered.
Correct. That would be a condition.
Okay. In this instance, there's no condition, correct?
There was no condition offered. Mr. Blunt did not have the opportunity to accept or reject it, correct?
After 40 years, the prison door is going to open. He is going to be set outside. The prison door is going to close behind him, whether he likes it or not.
Correct.
Okay. So, that leaves a partial pardon. Is this a partial pardon?
Your Honor, the word partial pardon, I don't know where that term came from. It's the Virginia Constitution talks about commutations and it talks about pardons.
Doesn't Lee versus Murphy say that part of, if the governor has the ability to pardon, he has the ability to partially pardon?
Say again, Your Honor?
Doesn't Lee versus Murphy talk about the different types of pardons or the different subsets of pardons? Absolute, conditional, partial. Doesn't Lee v. Murphy?
I don't remember that, Your Honor, but I do know that in modern law, the word partial pardon is absent.
The partial pardon is in Lee versus Murphy.
That they may have mentioned, but they didn't rule on it.
They didn't have to. They had a conditional pardon.
That's what they decided. Yes.
If in fact, let's just presume for purposes of our discussion.
Yes, sir.
That this is a partial pardon. Where does that leave you, constitutionally?
Since the word partial pardon, I don't know what the rules are for a partial pardon, Your Honor. I really don't. The Virginia Constitution specifically says a commutation can only be for capital punishment.
We're presuming it's not a commutation.
Okay. And the governor
has the ability to pardon.
Say again?
The governor has the ability to pardon.
He does.
He can pardon with conditions or without conditions. He can pardon fully or he can pardon partially, if in fact he has the constitutional ability to pardon.
Your Honor, I don't disagree that the governor has the authority to pardon, but if the court is going to make a ruling or is considering the fact that partial pardon doesn't require any conditions.
You've already told us that this one doesn't. Let's go by process of elimination. This is not a full pardon.
Correct, Your Honor.
This is not a conditional pardon.
We disagree with that. It could be.
What is the condition that your client must accept in order for the 40-year term to be imposed?
The condition would be his signature.
Why? Where's the quid pro quo?
Lee versus Murphy said a conditional pardon requires the inmate's signature.
Is there a signature line?
And we're saying, what if this is not a conditional pardon?
The only other thing it can be, Your Honor, is what it says it is, a commutation.
Okay. I understand your position. Thank you.
And I understand that you may not have considered this because we've talked about partial pardons and we didn't recognize that Lee recognized a partial pardon as part of the governor's power. But what would be the difference between the partial pardon and the commutation? And I will ask the Commonwealth as well, because I'm sure you're going to say that would be a better question for Mr. Rector.
Commutation, according to the Virginia Constitution, can only be done for capital punishment, and it doesn't require anything from the inmate. The inmate takes it as it is.
As far as consequences, what would the consequences of a partial pardon versus a commutation? Would there be differences in the consequences?
If it's called a pardon, Your Honor, I am unaware of any pardons that I can think of. I would be guessing, Your Honor. As far as commutation goes, I can tell the court there is no condition. It's done. As far as pardons go, and I know...
When you say it's done, the governor commutes the sentence. Are there other parts of that sentence that remain, or is it your position that a commutation would be a total wipeout?
Yes, and since it's supposedly only... restricted to capital punishment cases, it's going to be either stopping the death penalty for life in prison or reducing life in prison, which can be a capital sentence, to something less. That's it. That's all the Virginia Constitution allows.
So there would be something remaining once that reduction takes place.
Yes.
But if this is a pardon and Mr. Blount is allowed to walk out of the jail or the penitentiary after 40 years, then there is no further obligation to the Commonwealth. Would that be correct?
Well, Mr. Blunt wants the...
I understand your argument.
Right.
I'm trying to struggle through the difference between commutation versus partial pardon.
And once again, Your Honor, my time's running low here. As far as partial pardons go, I don't have a whole lot of information on what a partial pardon is because it's not offered to inmates. He has three choices.
On the Secretary of the Commonwealth's website.
Correct.
Well, don't get wrapped around the axle too much on this, but Lee versus Murphy flat out addresses the dialogue we're now having with you. It says that, I don't have the page number, but here's the quote. Speaking of the particular warrant, the pardon, conditional pardon, whatever you're going to call it, in that case. Now, it's true that this paper does not purport to be a pardon of any sort, but a mere commutation of punishment, period. Then it goes on to say, but it still had conditions attached, and the condition, anomalously enough, was that it be accepted. The last sentence of the paragraph says this: certainly it has the operation and effect of a partial pardon, which is described in many of the cases as merely remitting or releasing the punishment without removing the guilt of the offender. And it gives a couple, three sites for that.
Conditional pardon would be the same thing, Your Honor.
So isn't Lee versus Murphy equating conditional pardons as simply partial pardons?
No, sir. Because I don't. They never tell us what the what the inmate must do for a partial pardon. And it does tell us what they must do for a conditional pardon.
Well, Lee versus Murphy holds that the particular pardon or commutation, as it was styled in that case, was a conditional pardon. Right.
Which we would ask this court to also construe the current one.
But in fact, he didn't have to do anything. Everything was being done to him. So it wasn't truly conditional, which was the point of the dissent in Lee, but the court characterizes it as conditional anyway.
Yes, it does. I have 1 minute left. I'll hold on to it.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court, Stuart Raphael for the Director of the Department of Corrections. I want to focus on two issues. The first is whether the text of the provision at issue here is ambiguous, and if so, how do you resolve the ambiguity? What methodology do you apply? And second, how do you treat the contrary language in Lee versus Murphy? Let me start with the question of ambiguity. Mr. Cogleshell argues that the text is unambiguous in his favor, That clearly can't be right, because the second sentence of the provision doesn't use the word capital punishment in referring to commutation. That's where the governor has to report every year any commutations and other things that are provided. And based on Justice Goodwin's opinion in the Brown case, among other decisions by this court, we know that when the General Assembly or the framers of the Constitution use a word in one place and not in another, that has meaning. So that's an ambiguity under his interpretation. It can't be unambiguous his way. If you think of this on a continuum, unambiguous his way, unambiguous the Commonwealth's way, and then ambiguous in the interim, in the middle, midpoint, I think you could argue it's unambiguous in the Commonwealth's favor. And that's simply because a commutation like a partial pardon is simply a subset of the power to pardon. And when the...
Did you say unlike a partial pardon?
A commutation is like a partial pardon. In answer to your question, Justice Bell, I don't think there is a difference between the two. And we've seen historically that the courts use these terms somewhat interchangeably. You see that in the U.S. Supreme Court cases. In the early cases talk about pardons, then it goes to conditional pardons, and then it goes to commutations when it's talking about commuting a death sentence to a sentence of life in prison. The terms are used interchangeably.
Are the consequences of the two the same? I can't find any law on this except for the sentence that Justice Kelsey quotes out of Lee, which says certainly it is the operation and effect of a partial pardon, which seems to me that even by saying it has the operation and effect, it might indicate that they are different. But what are the consequences of a partial pardon? I guess you would say not, because you said they are the same. So I guess I don't need to ask you.
Yeah, and the authority, Justice Powell, for how you define them, we did have in our brief, we did cite the provisions out of Lee, but there are also quotations from Black's Law Dictionary and Anger that define a partial pardon in a way that makes it indistinguishable from a commutation.
There is a line out of Lee that says a performance of the condition renders the pardon absolute. They're talking about a conditional pardon, obviously, and entitles the felon to his discharge from all penalties consequent upon the conviction. What are the penalties consequent upon the conviction?
Well, here it's the prison term, which is reduced by the commutation or partial pardon. That's the reduction in the sentence. On the issue of ambiguity, as I said, I think you could interpret this unambiguously in the Commonwealth's favor because a commutation is a subset of the power to pardon. And this is the example I would use with the court. In earlier cases, there was some question as to whether the Constitution of Virginia provided the power to grant a conditional pardon. Lee versus Murphy said, no, it does. It's a subset of the power to pardon. But suppose the framers of one of our constitutions, just for clarity, said the governor has the power to grant pardons and reprieves and also to grant conditional pardons. And the argument were made, well, that must mean that he didn't have that power before. No, the answer would be it simply confirmed the pre-existing power. And I actually found an analogy that the court might appreciate in the Puryear versus Commonwealth case. It's 83 Virginia 51 from 1887. The question there was whether a juror who had been convicted of a felony but pardoned should have been able to sit on the jury. The problem was the pardon was under the 1851 Constitution, which didn't have the language about the governor having the power to remove civil disabilities. And so the argument was made the disability couldn't have been removed. This court said in Puryear that when that language was added in the 1871 Constitution, it was simply confirmatory of the pre-existing power.
I assume commutation is within the same genus as conditional pardons or partial pardons, whatever pardon you want to call it. Lee says you have to have acceptance, and Justice Marshall, John Marshall, and Wilson said that. We have Justice Holmes years later, without mentioning John Marshall's holding, saying the opposite. Why isn't the right answer for us to follow what we've said 100-plus years ago and let the powers that be react as they should react if they disagree with that interpretation and move to change the language of the Constitution?
The answer, Justice Kelsey, is that the Constitution has been amended several times. And
after Lee, that's part of the amendment.
After Lee, after the course of conduct of commutations that didn't involve capital sentences, and more importantly, this court said in Edwards that the clemency power in our Constitution is coextensive with the federal Constitution, except to the extent it's been restricted.
But suppose you and I worked for all these governors that issued the 1,640 conditional pardons commutations. And And the question is, do we need to, do we, can we do this? Why wouldn't the answer be, as long as the guy accepts it, Lee versus Murphy says fine? Well, the guy's obviously going to accept it because he's delighted to get less time. So I don't get your argument that if we rule against you, 1,640 commutations are now, you know, rendered facially invalid. Because Lee would only say, only if they rejected it. And there's no evidence
right.
They did.
I think the problem, Justice Kelsey, is that you would then give the inmate the power over the clemency power. And as Justice Holmes wrote in Biddle in 1927, that's a bad idea because...
Well, as Justice John Marshall wrote earlier than Justice Holmes, that's what the law has always been.
But of course, as you pointed out, Biddle rejects that in 1927. There's been a subsequent constitutional convention in Virginia where... A. E. Dick Howard said that the point of the clemency power is to be coextensive with the federal power, except to the extent that it's restricted. And it is not clearly restricted in our Constitution. I think the dispositive thing here is the historical context. In the 1800s, there was a real fight about whether the president or the governor had the power to commute a capital sentence on the theory that it was a different in kind sentence. It was a substitution of one sentence for another. That theory is best articulated by Justice McLean in the dissent ex parte Wells. And Justice McLean relies upon an 1820 opinion from then Attorney General William Wirth. And he doesn't cite the opinion, but I found the citation. It's one opinion of Attorney General 327. And I read it yesterday, and he actually, William Wirth in 1820, 30 years before Lee, is talking about this very problem. Can you commute a death sentence? And he concludes under the Code of Military Justice that you can. But the point is that this was a real issue historically. And our framers of the 1851 Constitution solved that problem by confirming that the power of clemency extends to the power to commute a capital sentence. And by doing that, we avoided in Virginia what ended up being 75 years of litigation in other jurisdictions, including the U.S. Supreme Court.
Did they solve a problem or did they create a problem in that we're sitting here today debating whether by placing that language in the Constitution, they limited commutations to capital offenses?
Well, they solved the problem because it was unclear whether, at that time, whether the clemency power extended to capital sentences. So it solved that problem.
So let's parse Justice McLean's words in Ray Wells. Because clearly, our Constitution of 1851 and Wells in 1855 understood the distinction. And at least in 1855, there was a distinction between a partial pardon and a commutation. Justice McLean said, I have no doubt the president, under the power to pardon, may remit the penalty in part. This consists in shortening the time of imprisonment. Partial pardon.
Yes.
In contrast, the power of commutation overrides the law and the judgment of courts. It substitutes a new, and it may be an undefined punishment, for that for which the law prescribes a specific penalty. Commutation, a specific penalty. Death, a new penalty. Imprisonment is substituted for it. So at least in 1855, it wasn't a difference in degree of partial pardon versus commutation. It was a difference in kind. The two terms had very distinct, contrasting meanings. The fact that the governor calls a partial pardon a commutation doesn't make it a commutation, does it?
Well, under the reasoning of Lee, that's correct. So, and I agree with you. I don't think you may be correct that a death sentence reduced is a commutation, okay. But commutation also extends to the idea of shortening a term of your sentence. But I agree with you under the reasoning.
It didn't in 1855.
I don't think that's correct. But I don't think it matters.
You're arguing with Justice McLean.
Well, that,
not me.
Well, I think the question is, are they functionally the same? And Lee teaches, you look at what it does, not what you call it. Right, that was the holding of Lee.
Well,
even though it was called a commutation, it was valid as a conditional pardon. But to get back to I think both of your questions, there was a real question in the 1800s whether Virginia's constitution extended to a conditional pardon.
Lee answered that.
Well, it did, but you may recall there was some legislative history from 1847 where the General Assembly had a proposed bill that would have confirmed the power to grant conditional pardons. It wasn't adopted. the argument was made, well, that shows that there isn't the power to grant conditional pardons. And Lee said, no. The fact that they didn't enact it doesn't prove that the power didn't exist. The conditional pardon is a subset of the power to pardon. But if our founders had changed the Constitution to say the power to pardon and grant reprieves includes the power to grant conditional pardons, that doesn't mean the power didn't exist before,
okay.
Right?
That's
just like in Currier.
I love the history lesson. Let's go back to the future now.
Sure.
2015. Does our current Constitution give the governor the power to conditionally pardon?
It's always been there, yes.
Okay. Does our current Constitution give the governor the power to partially pardon without conditions?
Yes.
Okay. Is what the governor did in the Blount case a conditional pardon or a partial pardon?
Well, I think it's both, we win either way. If it's a partial pardon, it was valid. If it was a conditional pardon, if it was a commutation, it was valid.
I'm not even asking about is it a commutation. I'm telegraphing what my position is. I'm not sure about my six colleagues. What is the condition that was tied to this particular
pardon? There isn't one. It just shortened the term in the penitentiary. You can argue in Lee that maybe the condition was moving from the penitentiary to the city jail,
but that's an interesting historical asterisk,
right.
No doubt about it. Under the statute which we labor, we can recast a question from the federal court, can we not?
Yes, that's correct.
If we answer that this is a partial pardon, is there objection? What would be the position of the Attorney General's office?
We would agree with you that it is a partial pardon, and you could characterize it that way.
Let me ask a follow-up question. You have answered twice that partial pardons and commutations are the same thing. If we conclude that by placing that language in the Constitution, the framers intended that the only sentence that can be commuted is a capital sentence, where does that leave you?
Well, I think it could still be a partial pardon.
But you told me that a partial pardon and a commutation are the same.
They're functionally the same. But the courts over the years have treated these things often interchangeably. If you look at, as I said, you look at Schlick and Biddle and Ex parte Wells, the terminology goes from calling the commutation of a death sentence, what we would call that. It goes from calling it a pardon to a conditional pardon to a commutation. The words change and are used interchangeably over time.
But who better than our court to tell us what our Constitution means? And Lee versus Murphy treats essentially a non-conditional commutation as a conditional pardon, and then adds, we know that conditional pardons in our common law require assent. So why isn't that, in this area where there are obviously reasonable debates on both sides of the history, why isn't that the safest route for this court to take?
Well, because after Lee, this court decided in Edwards that the power under Virginia's clemency provision was coextensive with the federal power unless it's been explicitly restricted, and that was the understanding of the framers in 1969, as we know from Professor Howard. But the other reasons why, if there is an ambiguity, you resolve it our way, is I talked about history. I think that's the most compelling argument. The second one is structural. We know from Edwards that the clemency power is vested in the executive. If you're going to restrict that, it ought to be by clear statement. And there is no clear statement in Article 5, Section 12 that would suggest restricting
that. There's a clear statement of every member of the court in Lee versus Murphy, including the dissent. The commutation outside of the capital punishment era is not allowed. It was very clearly stated. We've had a revision of our Constitution since then, and nobody has said that is wrong.
Well, we've had 1,600 commutations, and I appreciate, Justice Kelsey, your point that you could construe those as accepted by conduct, but I think the more important thing is that they were called commutations.
So was the one in Lee versus Murphy.
Well, and there's a question here. Is the language in Lee versus Murphy, is that dictum or is it a holding? Ultimately, it doesn't matter because we think they got it wrong, just like the Supreme Court of West Virginia thought that Lee got it wrong in construing the same provision under West Virginia's Constitution.
Lee versus Murphy also says that acceptance or non-acceptance can be the condition of the pardon. You just agree with that as well.
I don't think that there was a condition, there was no request for the prisoner to sign the commutation. He happened to sign it. And the posture of that case was he had been let out, the sheriff's trying to get him back in, and is arguing he signed this condition to be sent to the Richmond City Jail. And that was the basis of the decision. But the briefing in the case doesn't discuss the commutation versus pardon issue or conditional pardon issue. We think it is a dicta, but even if it's not, it was poorly reasoned, and for the same reason the Supreme Court of West Virginia said it should not be binding. It shouldn't be binding here either. Thank you.
All right.
I have 1:07, and I will proffer something to this court. I think this court today is in exactly the same position as Lee versus Murphy was back in 1872, and here's why. The 1870 Constitution clearly said a governor only has the power to commute capital punishment, period. Governor Walker tried to do something else. He tried to commute a non-capital crime. 2 years later, this court struck him down and said, you can't do that. And now here we are today. We have eight that have happened since 1946. That's it. They all started in 2010. So instead of this court having one that it needs to address and clear up this confusion, it only has eight, but that's still just eight, Your Honors. So this court is kind of faithfully in the exact same place. And we're asking the court to do what Lee versus Murphy did. Was Governor Walker wrong? Lee versus Murphy says, yes, he was. Was Governor Kaine, Governor McDonald, and Governor McAuliffe wrong? Well, we're asking this court to say yes. But I will say this,
we don't have to say that. We don't have to say that because Lee versus Murphy would characterize those commutations as conditional pardons that were accepted.
Just merely mislabeled. True, Your Honor. We have merciful governors who are trying to do merciful things, and they don't have parole to deal with, so this is what they try to do. And this court probably needs to tell them what their exact wording is supposed to be. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Call the next case.